Chapter 3. Natty was born 3 years later, in 1933. Even as a young child, she knew Abby was crazy. The question that haunted Natty throughout her life was whether Abby was born crazy, or she made that way because their mother indulged her so much. As they got older, Abby seemed to enjoy tormenting Natty. One day, she put a rubber snake behind the base of the toilet, even though she knew Natty was terrified of snakes. The memory could make Natty shudder well into her elder years. It was why there could be no National Geographic magazines in any house she ever lived in, no nature shows on any television set. It was why, when Natty walked into a salon with her adult daughter many, many years later, she personally removed the picture of the woman with the latest hairstyle and a snake wrapped around her neck from the salon wall. Natty learned early to calm herself by thinking things through logically. She learned to be dependable and practical and saw little use for dwelling too long on what you couldn't have or didn't need. Her father soothed her terror of snakes and gave her life worth. They were kindred spirits. Sometimes she sat on his lap and listened to President Roosevelt on the radio as he talked about lots of things she didn't understand. They listened to music and sang, "I'll Never Smile Again," and later, "White Christmas." She asked him why they didn't celebrate Christmas when some other Jewish families had Christmas trees. He told her the Jews had Hanukkah with presents and pretty lights. Every night, Abby woke Natty from a sound sleep to ask her for water and pepper her with questions. "What time is it?" seemed to be her favorite. Natty stumbled out of bed and tugged at their mother, who would go into the kitchen, get a glass of water, bring it to Abby, hug her, and tell her to go to sleep. Natty watched from her bed beside the window. She woke her mother rather than fetching the glass of water herself, because she vainly hoped Mother would do something to stop Abby from waking her up every night. If Natty had to wake up because of Abby, then so did Mother. Every night, as soon as Mother left, Abby asked again, "What time is it?" Abby knew when she was starting to lose control. She could sense the changes, almost like an aura someone got before a seizure or a migraine headache. She had those too. If she was alone, she could sit down quietly and calm herself. If she waited too long, or no one recognized the signs, she couldn't stop the voices in her head, or the urge to run away from whatever was after her. It was as if someone or something else had taken control of her body and her mind. Abby didn't know why she was this way. From long experience, she could tell when Natty was sound asleep. She usually waited till Natty was enjoying a dream before waking her. Sometimes they both lay awake, listening, especially when their parents argued with each other. Abby whispered random words, apple, sidewalk, orange, and felt better. After she'd had her glass of water and a hug from her mother, she'd curl up and try to sleep. She'd often hear Natty crying quietly, clutching an empty pillowcase to her chest. She had taken to holding it as she tried to fall asleep each night. Abby knew Natty tried to hide it, but Abby saw it and decided not to tease her about that. Abby still needed her stuff bare at night. She understood needing something to hold on to in the dark. Abby liked school. Her teachers told her she was bright and could draw well. It was only at home that she couldn't control herself. Home was a thing Abby couldn't describe. Is home the rooms and the furniture inside? Is home wherever Mother is? Is home supposed to be a feeling that everyone else but me seems to have? Abby felt lost in a place both familiar and unsettling. On one of the many trips with her mother to see specialists, a doctor told her she had an illness, but Abby didn't feel sick. She didn't know why she did the things she did or why she got satisfaction from upsetting Natty. She liked her younger sister, maybe even loved her. She couldn't define the problem and doubted she ever would. Natty didn't know she was poor. Because of her mother's salary of $5 a day, they managed to get enough to eat, even if it wasn't very filling. She played Monopoly and Jacks with kids in the neighborhood. The street names on the Monopoly board were just words without meaning. Money was for play and came in blue, yellow, and green. She played Mahjong, too, sitting on the stoop on warm summer evenings. The two-family house sat on Chester Street, a broad, tree-lined avenue bordered by similar multifamily homes. Natty missed her best friend Mona, who lived down the street. She was a little blonde girl with Russian parents. Mona went with her mother to Bernstein's to translate for the grocer. Natty envied her bike and piano lessons. Natty didn't have a bike, but she roller skated down the block to Mona's house every day until her parents decided Mona shouldn't play with a Jewish girl. A deaf couple lived next door to Natty's house. She wanted to talk to them, but wasn't sure how to go about it. Howard also lived next to the deaf couple. He was an awkward boy who lived in the downstairs apartment with his parents. His aunt and uncle lived upstairs. Every day, Howard's father, a businessman in the city, left the house in a clean suit and tie with a tie pin, pocket handkerchief, and leather briefcase. Natty's mother didn't seem to like Howard's family. She'd heard her mother say to her best friend, Laura, "I bet they come from money. I can't imagine he earns much." Howard's mother had a lovely home with nice things. Natty's home didn't have nice things, but she thought her mother wanted some. She was always talking about the things she didn't have. "I heard he has another family on the other side of Brooklyn," Laura had said. "Howard and his mother are leaving. Can you imagine?" "No. How about that?" said Mother. Natty caught the note of pleasure in her voice. Natty and Abby took care of themselves in the summer while their parents worked. There weren't many cars on the street, but vendors with carts came to see all the mothers. Natty liked to watch them arrive and listen to the repetitive banter they used every day. She wondered why the mothers didn't seem to tire of it. "Watermelons," called one man, displaying ripe red fruit, practically bulging from the bright green rind. Natty's mouth watered. He let the children feed his horse with oats he kept in a bag under his cart. His voice competed with the trumpet the ragman used to announce himself and then call out in Yiddish, "Bebepkes," to bring the housewives to the doors and windows. The mothers threw their old clothes and shoes out the window for him to put in his cart. "A dank," he said as he piled the rags into his cart and went on his way. Natty loved to stand outside the shoemaker's store window watching him at his machine. Her father told her that ever since the Depression began, everyone took their shoes there since they couldn't afford to buy new ones. The shoemaker's machine seemed to fix them like magic. In the winter, Natty's family put newspaper in their shoes to keep their feet warm. Sometimes Natty chatted with their neighbors, Seal and Nathan, and their two grown-up daughters, Sophie and Annette, through the air shaft adjoining the two houses. Everyone in that family was a good cook. Sophie and Annette's husbands were cooks in a kosher restaurant in the city. Sometimes they tried out new recipes for their husbands and handed samples to Natty and Abby through the air shaft. "What are you making today?" called Natty. "Kasha varnishkas, but with a new flavor," one of them might answer. During the summer, Natty often saw Sophie lying on a cot in the living room, probably trying to catch the occasional breeze. Whenever Rose, Abby, and Natty were away in Cleveland, Seal passed lunch and sugary treats to her father through the air shaft. He told Natty, but it was their secret. "Here you go, Harry. I made jelly donuts. Try one," called Seal, licking her fingers after Harry took the donut from her hand.